It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey people, this is DJ.
And this is Ish.
And this is season 4 of
Better Let Me Tell You.
Yes, it's like I just see like all this movement.
When I move, the earth shakes. Wait, that's a song.
By Carole King. I feel the earth move under my feet.
Oh,
you know, it's on Tapestry. Probably still on the Billboard 100.
It's a little too white for me, but we love Carole King.
Listen, I have no problem with Tapestry. It's probably still, you know, number one somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, Tapestry. That's the one that had like all these songs, right?
Yeah, like every
"You Make Me Feel."
Everything was like
actually.
A hit.
You know what song I like? You know what song I really like from Carole King
what?
Is the one Gloria Estefan redid. It's too late.
Oh,
baby,
it's too late.
Well, with that note,
yes. See how we tied it back to Gloria
singing Gloria Estefan remakes of Carole King
songs.
Welcome to episode
143.
143. Yes. How is everybody? Beto Friday.
Yes, it's a fantastically. It's gonna be a long weekend.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Yay! So, yeah. Yay, you get an extra day to just lounge and do nothing. El Día de los Enamorados.
El Día de los Enamorados.
President's Day.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, it's like, okay. And that's nice, because if you have Monday off, you know, you can go out for dinner and have a little bit to drink, maybe stay in. Also, como el Valentín, every place is packed. You can do a later dinner and not worry about having to wake up the next day to go to work.
Yeah, but then, you know, Valentine's Day, like, restaurants are so like blah, like full, and
that's true. Well, not this year, probably.
Well, I take that back.
And they're probably gonna be at 50% capacity, if nothing else.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Happy Valentine's Day. Happy everything.
So, oye, this is, I feel, the week of viral videos.
Right.
First of all, I want to let you know that I am not a German Shepherd.
Okay, I am not an ocelot.
Oh, okay.
Yes, just so we're clear.
So we're making reference to what everybody probably saw this week. The thing about the lawyer, I'm not a cat. What I think is funny.
I love it.
That is one of the fastest videos that went viral.
Because I like the same day, right? I mean.
Dude, I got it like midday, like everybody else.
I'll say it happened in the morning, yeah, right. By 12.
And
it was.
By the 6 o'clock news, they were putting it on the
yeah,
6 o'clock
yeah,
news.
Yeah.
They spoke about it on The View. Like, I was it. Like, coño, I know things that go viral quick, but this was like lightning speed.
You know, during a pandemic, viral goes quicker.
So, you know, it's really funny. So, back in my litigation days, sometimes, you know, people did have to appear telephonically, right?
Right, digital, virtually.
No, telephonically.
That's what
like,
it was called?
Most courtrooms are. No, really, telephonically. No. Most courtrooms are equipped with like a phone system
where you
can call in and
like
there's
a speaker
there,
okay.
Like a speakerphone.
Okay, okay.
There's a speaker there and you know, if for whatever reason counsel can't make it or whatever, they could appear telephonically.
Okay.
And again, it's pretty much a conference call, right?
Yeah.
The judge is there. One of the parties is there. You know, the person that appeared telephonically, there's a speaker. So they speak and you could hear them. Right. And then obviously there's a microphone and they could hear you.
Right.
Right. That's very, very rudimentary technology, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's existed. That's basic.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was always an issue.
Really?
Either the person couldn't hear or we couldn't hear the person. Because in most, and I'm sure you've done it too, a lot of times when you have to do like a business call, you have to call into like a number.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. Like a group call or something. Yeah.
A group probably call into a number. Mm-hmm. There was always an issue. So that's why when this whole thing with the pandemic started and court hearings started to go virtual, I was like, do it. Do it. And you know, a lot of attorneys... You know, they're older and maybe
that's
they're
true.
Not as savvy with technology. So I was like, do it. I know that some of the first like telephonic hearings that in, you know, in our office we attended were like a nightmare.
Right.
So this whole thing, I just thought was like, well, yeah, I'm sure
of course
this is happening all the time. What I think is funny.
I loved it.
What I think is funny is that who released that?
I thought the same thing. So listeners, for those of you who I don't know where you've been because it's been everywhere. So it was a Zoom call, right? It was four little squares, and the bottom square has a lawyer who somehow managed to have a filter of himself, like as a cat.
Yes, so all you saw was a white cat.
Was a cat talking, but I loved it because it's like when he would look away, like the cat's eyes would move, and sometimes the little mouth would be like, ooh.
Yeah.
So it was hilarious. José también la risa.
Yeah, and the judge was like, sir, I think you have a filter. Right. And then, of course, the line everybody said, well, I'm live, and
I'm not a cat. It's like, oh, thank you.
Thank you.
I thought Garfield had gone to Harvard.
Yes, yes. Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
But who released it?
Who released it?
My question.
Because I wouldn't think the cat released it.
Well, I mean,
the judge didn't release it. Maybe opposing counsel was a dick. He was like, man.
You know what though? Maybe the cat released it himself. Like, you know those times when you see people post things on like, you know, YouTube or TikTok or Instagram, and it's somebody like doing a fail of like filming themselves, they still post it, you know, because even they're in on the joke. So maybe it was that.
Yeah. So then that went viral. And the other thing that went viral was the Gorilla Glue.
I feel bad for her in the sense of what she's had to go through for a month. Pero que estúpida.
No, you know what? I feel bad for her because, okay, we could talk all day long about her bad judgment.
Yes.
But I don't think anybody expected for her to be... Her hair she had to undergo like surgery in a way.
They had to come up with like a treatment for her hair to be able to get it.
Here's out. You know, one of the things we always discuss. Okay, we all make errors and we all have lapses of judgment. And,
right.
You know,
right,
we
right.
all
nobody's
you
perfect.
Know, right. What made her think?
At what moment did she say?
Because here's the thing. She had a bottle of Gorilla Glue.
So for those who don't know, this is a lady from Louisiana who was doing her hair, and she had run out of
hairspray.
So she ran out of hairspray, and she thought it was a good idea
to put Gorilla
to
Glue
put
in her
Gorilla
hair.
Glue. And I have seen, because I've read up a couple of things, that when they asked, like, what was her thinking, is because it said multi-use.
Okay, but here's my thing about that. Gorilla Glue is sold only at like Home Depot or Lowe's or stuff like that.
At most Michael's.
No, they don't even sell it at
no,
Michael's.
No, it's not like
no,
a craft thing?
It's not a craft thing.
Oh,
it's
okay,
like
okay.
Gorilla Glue is used for like construction.
Oh, okay. See, I didn't know.
Especially like she had the spray one.
Yeah.
Because Gorilla Glue has several like different variations of Gorilla Glue. There's one that's like a tacky glue like Elmer's, just stronger.
Okay.
She had the spray one.
Right.
Right? Gorilla Glue... I can't believe we're talking about this. What like I want to know is like, okay,
why did she have the Gorilla Glue?
If she
to begin
had
with?
The Gorilla Glue at her house,
right?
Which I am assuming she did. I'm assuming she didn't go and buy Gorilla Glue because otherwise she would have just bought the hairspray, right?
Correct.
So that let's get that out of the way.
Okay.
So the Gorilla Glue's in the house. Now, generally, you buy Gorilla Glue for something in specific.
Right.
So me rompió esto.
Ella tuvo un proyecto.
Tengo un liqueo aquí.
Right.
You know, esta madera se partió. I have to glue it. You know, like...
Se está cayendo chijo.
A heavy duty... I mean, I bought Gorilla Glue as well. Like, I bought Gorilla Glue for chairs.
Okay.
Right?
So you know when you're buying Gorilla Glue, what it is for. Right. It's not like you went and bought Elmer's.
Right. They only sell it at Home Depot. You know, they don't sell it at like Sally Beauty Supply or Ulta. Right. you know, when they mean multi-use, it means that you could use it on like wood,
a chair,
on cement,
a pipe,
on, like, you know, like metal, like,
right,
you
right, know, right, plastic, not as hairspray,
not as hairspray.
I'm assuming that's
so.
Not
like, I want to know a little bit more, like, and I don't even mean this in a mean way, like what made her the logic?
You want to understand the steps that got her
yes.
there.
Because, again, if she had Gorilla Glue in the house, it meant that she or someone bought the Gorilla Glue
for something. Right.
The only thing I can think of is that, you know, maybe she didn't buy it. Maybe her husband or her boyfriend or somebody else that she lives with in the house.
Or her girlfriend.
Bought the Gorilla Glue.
We're making assumptions.
Or the girlfriend. Bought the Gorilla Glue. And, I don't know, put it in the vanity? Like, I don't know. Like, that's the only thing that, like... logically I can think of.
Because they probably keep the hairspray under the sink in the bathroom, mm-hmm. and they probably put it under there too.
You know, maybe a couple of months ago they had a leak, and the other person used
fixed
this fix a leak. So she's like, okay, well, this is
my thing. My thing is, even if she had said like, oh, I didn't realize what it was, like I just grabbed it thinking it was the hairspray, even that I would have been like, okay, shit happens. You know what I mean? Like, but she didn't even, when she came out and explained it, she didn't even kind of back into that, right? She was very upfront.
Right. Or the fact that, okay, let's say that she had a terrible, terrible misjudgment, right?
Right.
It was dark. She couldn't really read the can.
We're giving her a lot of benefit
right.
of doubt.
I know. I'm trying to be compassionate here because the woman, you know, had to go to like surgery and be
sedated.
She
was like that for a month and she was having headaches.
So I'm thinking like, okay, here's what else like I try to break down. Gorilla Glue, when you spray it, it doesn't...
It's not the consistency of hairspray.
Tacky and sticky.
Right.
Right? So let's say that she started to spray the spray
right.
as one does, right? Right?
Like hairspray, right, right. Thinking it was...
Did she ever think, oh, before I put this on my whole head, like when she first started putting it, maybe, oh, this is not what I think it is.
Right.
I mean, I just have so many questions.
I just wonder, like, and how much did she put on?
She put on a lot.
Because, I mean, a little bit goes a long way,
and
apparently.
You know what? And you know what? You know, everybody's laughing at her and whatever. That could have gone a lot more... That could have gone a lot more serious because...
Maybe if it had gone in her eyes.
Gorilla... No, but also Gorilla Glue is very toxic.
Right, right. Really?
Which we will be addressing that later another topic.
Put a pin in that. Put a pin in that.
It's very toxic. And, you know, she could have had some type of poisoning. Or like severe allergic reaction.
See, you don't know how you're gonna react to things.
Yeah,
that are,
I mean,
foreign substance.
I mean,
yeah.
Do you know how many chemicals words you can't pronounce? Gorilla Glue must have.
There's a lot of ashambugi legislate. You know,
not gum.
Yes,
something adhesive.
Polyurethane is probably the only thing we can pronounce.
Right, right. So, well, you know, she became an internet thing. Maybe now Head and Shoulders or Pantene or something will pick her up as a spokesperson.
Or, you know what? Gorilla Glue should use her. Like, they should both kind of laugh at the situation.
I feel that at this point, only good things can happen.
Yeah, I think they should both because, she's suing them.
Well, of course.
Of course. I think they should settle, but part of the settlement is that she's going to star in commercials for them for, like, next year's Super Bowl or something. You know, she's just like, she could be walking down the street and they're, like, using it, and she's like, that'll hold.
I don't think so.
That'll hold.
I don't think so. Because misuse of a product. So this is actually a very interesting legal term, legal concept. When you design a product, you have to, in your design or in your testing, you have to account for misuse.
Oh, really?
So for example, chairs.
Okay.
You have to account that people are going to stand on the chair. That's why many chairs say, do not stand on the chair. There's a label.
Oh, that makes... Oh, okay.
Yeah. So you always have to account for misuse. But it's a reasonable...
Misuse, right.
Misuse. Because a chair, it is reasonable that somebody may stand on a chair to reach
a light bulb or something, yeah.
Whatever it may be. It's not reasonable if you put a chair, you know, behind a pickup truck with a rope and think nothing's going to happen.
And then
right?
sue IKEA.
Right. And it falls apart, right?
Right.
Sort of like, actually, now that you said IKEA, that's a great example. IKEA has been in very, very intense litigation for many years regarding their bookshelves and their drawer. You know, their
That's why they all say you have to bolt it right to the,
because
they, to
they've
the wall.
Tipped over and killed toddlers and kids. Yeah. So that is an anticipated misuse that a child might climb it or whatever. So they do have to account for that. I'm going to go ahead and say that I think that, you know, that this is probably not an anticipated misuse. I don't know. Maybe Gorilla Glue. Maybe a lot of people have misused Gorilla Glue, but it just never went viral.
That's true, too.
Yeah.
That's true, too, because some people maybe just caught it in time or lo resolvieron and, you know.
So, bueno, let's talk about the elephant in the room.
You know, we're talking, of course, about the one, the only Holy Spirit.
Well, she hasn't died.
Well, but she's the Holy Spirit, you know, Britney Spears.
Britney what it is right now.
As I sit here with my Britney tank top.
So everybody's talking about Britney Spears.
Framing Britney Spears.
Framing Britney Spears. You saw it yesterday. I saw it a few days before.
I saw it. I'm fresh.
I would really like to bring in, if we could have, Stephanie from Mamas and Merlot. We reference Stephanie a lot.
We do.
She's like our contributing editor. She's like... to join us in this conversation. But so Britney Spears has been all over the news this past week. In fact, as we record this episode on Fake Friday, her dad's objections were overruled.
Oh, really?
They went to court today, but I'll get to that in a minute.
I was at the gym, so
So framing Britney Spears. So
I have so many thoughts and feelings about that.
Okay, so the New York Times did a...
It's a series that they have on Hulu in conjunction with FX. So every week they do a different, like, mini documentary, essentially.
On different people?
On different subjects, on different things.
So they did one on Britney Spears, and it's about... A big part of it is about the conservatorship, the Free Britney movement, and the media scrutiny that Britney Spears was subject to since the beginning of her career. And... you know, it does focus, especially in the latter end of it, on the conservatorship.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the conservatorship. So in about 12 years ago, in 2007, 2008, when Britney had, you know, a very, very rough time, she shaved her head,
it was 2007.
All that. She was in a very, very bad place. The judge, and her father, came into the picture and asked for a conservatorship. So let's talk about a little bit about what a conservatorship is. Mm-hmm. A conservatorship is a legal mechanism that exists in order to make somebody a conservator of a conservatee, right?
So basically,
they are putting somebody in charge of you.
Under someone's care.
The conservatorship can be of body or of estate.
And they're
both.
And they're not always together.
Or both.
Okay.
So there could be somebody who is a conservator of your body in the sense of where you could go and what you could do. Mm-hmm. Or there is of your estate.
So that's like your finances.
What your finances are. They control your finances.
Okay.
Or of both. Generally, it is of both because conservatorships, historically, are used predominantly for elderly people. Like people maybe that have dementia or have like Alzheimer's. And a lot of times it's people that have a lot of money, right?
Right, right.
That they need somebody.
Milagro que they didn't get Howard Marshall, Anna Nicole's husband wasn't in one.
That they need somebody to do that. And generally the conservatorship, you know, because a lot of people have asked me, they've texted me like, well, what's the difference between that and a power of attorney? Well, a power of attorney is something that you give to someone. And somebody that has a power of attorney can make those decisions for you, but you proactively give it to somebody and you have to be of sound mind and body. Whereas a conservatorship, it's the other way around. The conservatee doesn't give the authorization to do that. A court does. So generally a court Based on certain findings. Generally a court does that when it is proven by a specialist or a medical doctor that you are incapacitated or unable to fend for yourself and make your own decisions. That's why it's usually in, you know, usually it's for elderly people or very, very extreme circumstances. And generally, these conservatorships are short. A lot of times, in the case of elderly people, they die.
Right. So,
it
just ends.
But they're short. Britney Spears' conservatorship has been going on for over 12 years.
Yeah.
Right? And a lot of people have been questioning it. Here's what I obviously none of us know what's in there. And as the documentary states, there was an attorney that Britney Spears wanted to hire, and
he asked her certain questions,
and he thought she was of sound mind.
The responses were lucid
to be able to. She had the capacity of hiring an attorney,
according to him.
And the court, the judge said that she had Britney's medical evaluation, and based on that, she was not going to allow Britney to pick her own attorney. Right. That the court will pick her attorney.
Basically, the records said otherwise.
So this is my comment about that. And this is a part that I don't understand. And this is a little bit of my psych background, because I also have a psych background. One of the most severe mental illnesses you could have is schizophrenia. Right?
Right.
That's one of the most severe cases where, I mean, you could completely lose who you are.
Yeah.
There are millions and millions of people that have schizophrenia. And mind you,
there's varying levels of schizophrenia.
There's a spectrum.
You're right.
There's a spectrum in schizophrenia. There are millions of people that have schizophrenia who are not in a conservatorship, who run regular, normal lives.
As far as we know.
You know, are either on medicine or in treatment, but they run regular lives. So if these people are not subject to a conservatorship, why is she? And as I've discussed to you before,
podcast. We talk about Britney a lot, people.
In the 12 years that she has been on the conservatorship, she has, she did a Vegas residency.
For like 5 years.
She went on the circus tour. She went on the Femme Fatale tour.
She did the Piece of Me tour.
She did like 3 albums. She was on the X Factor. And she fulfilled all her commitments.
Right.
And you never heard of Britney Spears canceling concerts and Britney Spears showing up all crazy, somewhere.
She was very professional, and she did that.
So she is, at minimum, high functioning.
Right.
So that is the part that kind of baffles me, that I don't understand how this has gone as long as it has.
So here's and I have a lot of feelings about the documentary. First of all, from the fact that, like, a mí me dio sentimiento to see, like, the Britney we all fell in love with. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, so young, and even, like, during, you know, the Britney phase and in the zone and all that. And I was like, that's the Britney that I fell in love with, you know? The one thing that I always, you know, again, to your point, we don't know what's going on. But what I always say, and when these people on this documentary, which, to New York Times credit, they tried to get like everybody under the sun, and nobody agreed to show up. So they had to go with these, and I'm using the biggest air quotes possible. These hashtag free Britney activists. That's not a real thing.
But they were right.
But let me finish. Yeah, that's not a real thing. That's not something you're going to put on a resume. That's not like Greenpeace, okay? My thing with all of these free Britney, free Britney, free Britney, free Britney, is that we don't know what's going on. And a lot of the times the argument is like, well, you know, the conversation that so-and-so had, she seems okay. Or when they ask her, she doesn't want to be part of it, and this, that, and the other. And again, you know how much I love Britney. My counter to that is the average person, who has severe mental situations, mental health problems, if you ask them, do you want to be on medication? They're probably going to tell you no. If do you want to be in treatment? They're going to tell you no. So just because she doesn't want to be part of it or in it or whatever does not necessarily mean that she needs to be. And I say that in the absence of knowledge of what is her true medical situation, which, by the way, she doesn't owe anybody. In my opinion.
But you're saying that just because she doesn't want it doesn't mean she should be off of it?
Right.
But that's the whole point. The whole point is that all the evidence suggests that she shouldn't be on it because this is something that historically is for extreme cases.
But again, we don't know her medical history.
We don't know her medical history, but we know her work history and we know her commitment history.
Maybe she's very lucid when she's on her medication, but maybe she doesn't want to take her medication.
Right, but there's people who have all types of mental disorders who are not in conservatorships. That's why I give the example.
But there's also not that much at stake.
Not necessarily. That's why I gave, how many celebrities that we know have bipolar 2? How many celebrities that maybe maybe we don't know, have schizophrenia. I worked with people that had schizophrenia. And let me tell you something. Somebody in a schizophrenic moment or a moment of mania, it's pretty intense. And those people are not under a conservatorship. So why should she be subject to something that is there? I mean, there is nothing. There's no circumstantial evidence that shows that she should be on it, because again, she for 12 years, that's why everybody kind of scratches their head at this, because it's the point of the conservatorship was that legal mechanism was not created for somebody like her or somebody in this scenario. There's law and there's cases.
No, but I'm talking about her situation. We don't really know her situation.
But that's why I'm telling you that even if her I thought the most severe, I'm like, okay, what is one of the most severe mental illnesses somebody can have? Schizophrenia. Even if you are schizophrenic, you are not subject to a conservatorship.
Yeah, but the average person is not worth as much as she is, which I found interesting. Now, I will say, I did find it interesting. Hold on. I will find interesting in the documentary that there was mention at one point of, because see, now this is the part that I find a little fishy, where they were talking about creating like a hybrid.
A working relationship?
A hybrid financial model.
Right, that's not the way that works.
That's, now we're talking something.
But that is why she is paying her father to be the conservatorship. She's paying the attorneys. So it's not the attorneys and the father's best interest financially to let go of that conservatorship.
Right.
So they're going to hold on to that as much as you can, because Jamie Spears is getting paid to look over her fortune. Right? That's what he's been doing forever.
Yeah.
So again, she is, even they know that she is high functioning. She's done, her work record speaks for itself.
Her ability to show up.
Right? Her ability to show up. And that is something that's very, very important. So why this conservatorship? Because again, even people with the most severe mental illnesses, okay, are not subject to that.
Right.
So I just think there's some shadiness here. And as far as the Free Britney movement, I have to tell you that I disagree with you there, because, okay, yes, I wouldn't put Free Britney movement, you know, protester on my resume, but you know what? They were right. They were right. What they started saying, at first they were a little kooky, and you know, you were probably like, what are these people talking about? But ultimately they were right, because she has acknowledged them. She has said herself that she wants to be out of the conservatorship. So she actually was, they were actually were kind of right.
I just, as much as I love Britney, like, I can't see myself like going to, I feel like there's so many unknown variables.
I don't think there's that many unknown variables.
But we don't know everything.
We don't know everything, but I think there's enough knowing what I know about conservatorships and knowing what I know about the standard of law, I just don't see how they could keep this for as long as they have in good faith. The problem is that there's a lot of money at stake here, and people get very greedy when there's money. They want money, 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 money. So again, on the opposite side of her, it's in their best interest to keep this conservatorship as long as it can. So today, actually,
wanted to be happy.
There was a hearing where a few months back, Britney has said that she was not going to work.
Yeah,
until her father was removed as a conservator. She
wanted a bank.
She wanted a bank.
Yeah.
The judge in the last hearing didn't remove Jamie Spears, but added the bank.
So it's almost like baby steps.
Today, there was a hearing where Jamie Spears objected to that. To putting the bank on, and said that he should still be the one making
the sole decision.
Yes, and the court shot down his objections. So the court ruled for this hearing alone that he needs to make decisions with the bank. So he's not going to be making the sole decisions anymore. And her attorney said, he went on the record and said that that they are going to visit the issue of removing the conservatorship altogether at a later date. And to go to what you were saying, the attorney that spoke in this documentary, right, who is an attorney that is a, he specializes in conservatorships. Yeah. He said it himself. He's like, I spoke to her. I met with her. There was nothing to me that indicated that she needed this or she couldn't, at the very minimum, pick her own attorney. And look, because I think there's some shady dealing there. Pero bueno.
I don't understand why Jamie is still so involved
because
there's Lynn. And Lynn is the... I mean, again, there's probably... It's perception. Because throughout her whole career, I felt like Lynn was always the...
Right, but her father was the one who interjected and filed the conservatorship. Not her mother.
Bedake, they were divorced by then.
Yeah. Bedake. Her mother beat him to it. Bedake. And then the mom has been trying to shoot it down as well.
She's been trying to get in there.
Right. Yeah, yeah. So, and that's why they say
I forgot they were divorced.
That nobody can interview her. Nobody can get close to her because he also controls the body. He can control
the press,
where she goes or where she doesn't go.
Right.
Like she's a prisoner in her own home.
It's a lovely home to be a prisoner in.
But anyway, let's talk about the other part of the documentary, which this is actually the part that I was like, I told you so. Okay. So the other part of the documentary addresses the media scrutiny that Britney Spears was subject to most of her career.
It's funny.
And Justin Timberlake.
It's funny because, I mean, again, we've lived through her entire career, so we've seen it all happen. But when you see el yogur que le hicieron la vida a esa mujer with the paparazzi.
I didn't need to see this documentary.
No. But when you see it so like condensed, I remember living through it and feeling like it's too much. And you see it condensed in the span of like 10 minutes that they just no la dejaban vivir. Mm-hmm. I don't understand how anybody...
I remember.
I don't understand how anybody could be...
I...
But todo lo que pasó a esa mujer.
I've always...
The fact that she shaved her head is the least...
What is going on with Britney Spears now is what we've talked about here on the podcast several times, which is selective outrage. When people say, you know, today we're going to get outraged at this. And the best example I always have about this is R. Kelly.
Yeah.
R. Kelly always told you who he was.
But
R. Kelly, in 1995, married Aaliyah, who was 15. There was no secret about that.
But now everybody we're upset. Knew
it. But now we're upset. But it was okay. Right. R. Kelly, then some years later, in the mid-2000s or whenever, when there was a videotape of him on peeing on underage girls, there was no dispute about this, and he went to trial on child pornography allegations, people were stepping in the name of love, and he had his biggest hits. And then the thing with the girls being caged up in the house or prisoners,
surviving
people knew
R.
that
Kelly,
for years. Yeah. And it wasn't until the documentary came out that people were like, oh, R. Kelly's a monster. And it's like, no shit, Sherlock.
R. Kelly's
like,
told you forever
like,
who he was.
R. Kelly has always shown you who he is. So it's this selective outrage. Mm-hmm. Okay. The thing with Britney Spears, and it's not that I want to sound myself, you know, sound like I'm the smarter person or I'm like, I've always felt like that since day one. I remember when she had that interview with Matt Lauer. That she had just had her first kid and she was pregnant with her second kid. You know, she had gained some weight because of the pregnancy. Her face was swollen. She was all over the place. I remember thinking and saying, like,
there's something off.
Not even that there's something off. Saying just like, I, as a journalist or a producer, would have not let that air.
I would have stopped. The moment she sat down, I would have told the cameras to turn off.
If Matt Lauer would have done that interview, and I'm his producer, and he would have come back to me with that interview, I would have been like, you know what? Out of ethical and moral reasons, I'm not going to air this.
Right.
Because this is something that's absolutely terrible, what this woman is going through, and now we're putting this on for everybody to talk about.
And she looks like she's going through
and it. And she looks like it, right? Right. I've always thought that from day one, that con ella la cogieron. And everything that she did was bad. And the truth was that she wasn't any more or less sexy than any other girl.
Look, she was on magazine covers.
During her time or before?
Look, she was on magazine covers.
She was on magazine covers she was popular. She was popular, right? But even what she wore in Baby One More Time is not any more or less sexy.
She didn't create the schoolgirl uniform.
Than anything else before her.
She didn't create the school
girl. And everybody ate it up. Because why? They fed from her. The same way that they're eating from her from the conservatorship. You know, all these paparazzi would make, you know, como dijo the guy, oh, I have a family. And, you know, I want to buy a house and all that. So you go.
The one that they asked. Because he was like, well, you know, that was the one that he got the umbrella.
Yeah.
She's like, well, hadn't she told you to stop before? And he's like, well, you know, she had said, like, leave me alone now, but not forever.
Right. You know.
Really?
She was just talking about that one day.
Really?
Right? So it was just, I've always thought that, always, from the very, very, very beginning. And I think that the whole thing that they did of her, like the whole little girl image, and then sexualized her, I think that that was all artificial. I think that she, you know, when she first started, she was 17, 18, like any regular girl. Like, well, when she came out with Baby One More Time, she was in 15.
She filmed that video, I think she was 15, 16.
No. No, because Britney Spears was born in, I think, 1980 or 81.
Britney is going to be 40 this year.
Right, and that video came out 20 years ago.
Oh, my God.
Wow. You're so bad with numbers.
I am horrible with numbers.
She was in 15. No way. I mean, she was young, but she wasn't 15. But regardless, that whole thing of her being a little girl and then she turned into like a sex pop, that was all manipulated, because any regular girl who's growing
goes
up
through that.
Goes through that.
To so varying degrees, yeah.
So what's any
what's
different
new?
Than her?
What's new here?
So that, and my favorite part of it was the, you know, the reckoning of Justin Timberlake.
I've always told you. You know how I feel about that individual.
Well, you know how I feel about that individual. We talked about that in our very first episode.
You know how I feel about that individual.
Because in our first episode, we talked about the Super Bowl.
Beda.
Which would have been 3 years ago, which he did. And we were talking about him being the
Janet Jackson.
Right, the whole Janet Jackson thing. Yeah. I like Justin Timberlake's music. Let's make no mistake about
it. He's talented.
He's super talented. He could put on a great show. I actually think he's kind of cool, you know? But I've always thought that he's appropriated, and he's always taken advantage of situations. Now.
To his benefit.
To his benefit. Now, with the whole Britney thing, I've always thought that
too. We lived it.
I've always thought that too. I'm like, he stole that narrative.
Yeah.
He made it his own. Whether it was true or not, he made it his own.
And now
he
she was
talked about them having sex, and now she was a villain. Igor Melissa, the documentary. Notice how everybody asked Britney, what did you do to poor Justin?
Right.
What did you do to Justin? He did Cry Me a River, and then he painted her there as a slut. Right?
Right.
Right? And as a cheater and all this stuff. And that's the narrative that he stole. And he played her dirty.
Very.
He played her really dirty. And let's not even talk about what he did. No, let's talk about what he did to Janet Jackson.
Let's keep going down the road, shall we?
You know, what he did to Janet Jackson, right?
Because okay, she had to come out and give a freaking, you know, statement about her tit. And he's like, oh, I didn't know.
I tweeted about it this week.
Yes, I know.
You saw my Twitter?
Yes, you've just discovered Twitter, yes.
Yes, I tweeted. I have just discovered
He's a little Twitter. Late to the game, ladies and gentlemen, but he's making up for lost time.
Well, you know, not everybody's on Twitter. What did I tweet? I tweeted.
That's true. Not everybody is on Twitter, but you know.
I tweeted. For years, I've been saying how unfair the media and public were to Britney Spears and how Justin Timberlake used her breakup for his benefit. Too bad it took 18 years of conservatorship and a documentary for people finally to see how cruel she has been treated.
Right.
El, when he did the whole Janet Jackson thing, right? She said it. She's like, we were friends and he left me out to dry.
Because he did.
Right? And then it was like 4 years later that he gave a statement in which he said, yeah, they were really cruel to her and they were really mean to her, and she took like 90% of the
blame.
Right,
but you didn't man up in
the
moment.
Of course. Of course.
Because you were looking out for yourself like a little bitch.
The only benefit of the doubt that I give him, the only, is that both the Britney Spears incident and the Janet Jackson incident happened at the launch of... The Britney Spears one happened at the launch of his solo career, and the Janet Jackson one happened when his solo career had already like...
Was like the zenith.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm sure there was a lot of record company, you know, kind of management.
You know what? Yes. But at that point, he's still Justin Timberlake, especially with Janet Jackson, because with Britney... Whatever, you want to play the victim, play the victim. God knows there are many people out there who play the victim. It's like a fucking profession nowadays. But with Janet, he had enough star power.
He didn't.
To be able to go to his company and be like, no, I understand. No, it's not right.
And I always say the thing about Janet Jackson, and I say this over and over again. Well, we said it here on the podcast. Go to episode one and listen to it. If you ever want an example of sexism, modern day sexism, is that... Because she was labeled a slut after the Super Bowl incident. Mm-hmm. She was blacklisted from MTV. She was not invited to the Grammys. She got blacklisted from everything. Her career tanked. And she, you know, you're talking about Janet Jackson.
Yeah, it's not somebody who's starting out.
An icon. Her career tanked, and you can make the argument that it never recovered. Right?
I would.
Whereas his, you know, a week later or 2 weeks later, he was in the Grammys. Performing at the Grammys.
And then the Super Bowl said, come on back.
Right. Performing at the Grammys. He came back to the Super Bowl. His career took off.
He became an actor.
And he was a stud.
You know? Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of times people are like, oh, no, you know, because there's not sexism anymore. And, you know, women complain too much. And, you know, women have more rights. No. We know that that's not true. But that is an example of how the rules are not the same when you're a girl.
Right.
Because how can you explain...
Don't even talk about the fact that she's a black woman.
Exactly. How can you explain that the difference in effect between her and him?
Yeah.
Because you know what? The whole thing with a wardrobe malfunction, I actually think that they did it on purpose.
Of course they did.
Right? Because they, you know, they said that, oh, he was supposed to rip off the leather part, but the lace part was supposed to stay... But regardless of whether they were both in on it.
They knew what was going to happen because the song literally ends on the words, have you naked by the end of the song.
So whether they intended her boob to show or not, to me that doesn't matter, right?
Something was going to happen.
Something was going to happen. What matters was
the fallout.
The fallout.
Right.
Right? And I think, you know, back to Britney Spears, that he just was a little bitch about it.
Yeah.
A little bitch, you know, to his benefit.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't wish for people to cancel Justin Timberlake because, again, he's very talented and, you know, he's a great performer. Right. And, you know, I think that as a singer and an artist, he has something to contribute.
But call him out on his shit.
And I don't think that he's a bad person. But, yeah, call him out on his shit and he needs to man up and say what he needs to say.
And be like, you know what? Yeah. I did some shitty things.
Because he, you know, he was young, he was stupid, whatever.
Narrative you want to give.
You want to give. Because he freaking fucked over
two of the biggest female pop icons.
And he did. I don't think he did it on purpose. But, you know, the road to hell was paved with good intentions, you know?
I don't think he did it by accident.
So if you haven't seen it by now, everybody, watch Framing Britney Spears.
Yes, on Hulu.
So... And for those of you listeners who are probably saying, oh, we've gone all this time without any politics. Yes, we are watching the impeachment. Yes, we have seen the terrible videos and all that. You know,
shout out to the officer. Was his name Eugene Goodley, I think is his name.
I believe so. Eugene something. I haven't been watching as much as I should be.
No. You're watching the exact right amount because a ti eso te pone mal. And you need to detox a little bit.
I do. Okay. Because I take these things way too seriously. You know, it's only the future and foundation of our country and our democracy.
And I get it, but you need to take a breather in a while.
To
okay?
me, like, one of the reasons I have not been so invested in it is because I know they're not going to do the right thing.
Nothing's going to come of this.
I know that the Republicans are not going to impeach him. Maybe some will, but the majority of the party is not. And Marco Rubio's a pansy.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Person. and Rick Scott is another... Oh, don't even start me on Rick Scott.
He looks like a Bond villain.
He does.
I've always said it.
All he needs is a white cat.
Yes.
And a beige suit.
Yep. I've always said it. He looks like a Bond
villain. They're not going to do the right thing. And they're putting... It's not even party over politics, because that's not the Republican Party. I'm not sure what that is. If I say this all the time.
Might as well be called the Justin Timberlake Party. They're looking out for themselves.
If I was a real Republican, you know, like the Meghan McCain, I would... Well, she is so pissed off. Yeah. So I'm not watching it, or I'm not putting as much effort into it, because I know he's going to be acquitted. They're not going to impeach him. They're going to come up with all this bullshit. Like, oh, we need to unify the country. And
do you think that there will be a could potentially be grounds for a criminal trial or a criminal hearing, or?
No, because that's not in the place of the criminal. I don't think.
And no, but for inciting a riot.
I don't think that's what this is for.
Right,
I don't think any criminal court has jurisdiction on the President of the United States.
Mm.
That's why.
Couldn't they charge this is me, like, this is me going with my, you know, law and order degree. Could they, because obviously they're gonna the other people, you know, the insurrectionists will be charged with something or other.
Mm-hmm.
Could they kind of charge him as a
no.
Agitator or co-conspirator? Or
no. Impeachment is the proper jurisdictional avenue to charge a president with high crimes and misdemeanors.
Okay.
What's interesting is, from what I've heard, a lot of the people that are going to be tried, that have been arrested for the insurrection, part of their defense is going to be that they were following his orders. So it's just interesting that
so they're going to blame him.
Yes.
As part of the defense.
Right. But so it's just interesting that his defense
is that he didn't do anything.
Is that he didn't cause it. But their defense, the insurrectionists, when they get to their trial,
right,
is going to be that he ordered them.
He told them to do it.
He told them to do it. They're following his orders. Which leads you further to say, why would I follow any president's order to do something like that? Like,
why would I follow anybody's order?
Anybody's order, right? We're not saying, go storm this. I'm, you know, you're the fucking president. You're not going to tell me to go storm something. Like, fuck you.
Fuck you.
So, you know, to our Pero Politica fans.
Yes.
Because we've gotten a lot of comments from people that really enjoy our political talk.
Yes. Politalk.
Pero Politica.
I think we should really explore doing maybe like a monthly bonus political episode.
I don't mind, but I would like to do it with somebody.
No, but that's what I'm saying. We should explore so we can find.
I would like to do it with somebody. You know, if you're a listener and you're a conservative and a Republican, a real conservative.
When we say Republican, we're talking like a Meghan McCain Republican, an Ana Navarro Republican,
Donald Trump, Ronald Reagan form of Republicanism.
Right.
If you are Mitt Romney, if you are a real Republican, a real conservative, and you want to be part of a podcast, DM us.
Yeah.
We would love to have you.
All right, listeners. So this week we've got an interview with someone who's, I mean, she does it all. You know, she is a poet, an author, an actress, an artist. She's an entrepreneur. I mean, honestly, like, I'm running out of fingers counting how many things she does in one hand. So it's Mita Michelle. She's a Dominican-born lady, and she lived in Miami for a little bit, so we kind of touch on that for a couple seconds here and there. But she's in LA now, and she had the graciousness to give us an interview and chat about, you know, her work and what inspires her. And so, without further ado, Mita Michelle. All right, welcome back, mi gente. So, as mentioned, with us today we have best-selling author. She's also an actress, Mita Michelle. She's here to talk about really her career as a creative overall. Because, I mean, the more you hear about her, you know, from her latest book, 18 Inches, Distance Between the Heart and Mind, to her acting, to the creative initiatives. I mean, girl, you got a lot going on. Like, I mean, you are a busy lady.
I try to stay busy. That's my way of staying sane.
Well, thank you so much for taking a moment.
Although I have expensive taste.
Well, that helps. I can relate. I can relate. It ain't going to pay itself, right?
It won't.
So thank you so much for joining us. I hope you're doing really well. I know you're out on the West Coast enjoying the fantastic weather out there as opposed to the raininess we're having here in Miami.
That always passes in Miami. I'm originally from Miami.
That's right.
And you just get used to the rain. In Miami.
But I'm a born and raised Miami boy, and después de 40 años, I'm still not used to the rain. So I don't know. I don't know how long it's going to take.
I will tell you something. People drive a lot better in Miami in the rain than they do here in L.A. because it hardly ever rains in Southern California. So people have no idea how to drive. I think people stay home when it rains more often. If they don't have to be out, they will not go out. It's ridiculous. It's people just become full of fear when it rains here.
But imagínate, if they were to do that here in Miami, we'd never grow out with the amount of times that it rains.
I know.
So, you know, I know you're a Dominican girl, raised in Miami.
Yes.
How did you get started? Because I know, you know, 18 Inches is your latest release, but it's not your first release. You know, as I mentioned, you're a best-selling author, so I believe you've got two other books under your belt.
I have three other books, but two other books under part of this 18 Inches series. This 18 Inches is the last installment of the Letters series that I began with my first book titled Letters to the Men I Have Loved. And that's really the book that started my journey. I always knew that I wanted to publish a book since I was like 7 years old.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, I always had that goal pretty clear since I was a child. And I finally did it, and I did it more as an art project. Because, yeah, I didn't know it was going to become the success it became.
Right.
I did it more, you know, just to release, to express myself. Kind of like when a painter paints, they're not painting because they want to sell a painting. They're painting because that's what...
They got to get it out.
They need to get it out.
Yeah.
So it's a need. It's a necessity. So for me, that is what writing is. And I wrote that first book. It's such a raw book. I didn't edit it much. I just released it, and it became a huge success. And that continued my journey as a poet and as an author. And now here we are, fourth book, 18 Inches, which I'm super proud about. I think it's my best work. It's my best work in every sense, in my opinion.
Really? You said in every sense, but I think in what way, if you had to pick one way, what would you say, just because it's more of a reflection of who you've become and so who you more truly are, or?
Well, I believe that my first book and the second one, I think they're, all those books are for a moment in time of my life. And I think they're so special, just, you know, in the same equal way. They're all my babies. But I feel that with this book, you can see the growth as a writer for me.
Okay.
You know, we continuously try to excel in what we do, to get better. Like that Mamba mentality, right? You want to get better. And I think that this book has demonstrated that I have grown as a writer. And also in my vulnerability, my confidence as a poet, because I believe that vulnerability takes courage, and when you're expressing and sharing such deep points of your life, it takes courage. And I think that I went all the way out there. Like I had a lot of courage. I expressed things that I hadn't shared with anyone. Really. And I definitely have done that because I understand the importance of the artist in society, of expressing with words or with art whatever it is you're feeling, because in the end there's other people that don't have the words to describe what you're going through. So you're like a top.
Yeah, you're like you're like a conduit for other people's emotions, because a lot of times, you know, we're all feeling things, but we don't necessarily know how to put it into words. And I think that's where you know, artists like yourself are so, I'm just going to say, they're very necessary in the world, right? Because so many times I think we go through life like, I know what I'm feeling, but I don't know how to articulate it. And am I the only one? And if I can't say it out loud, then is it even real? And, you know, that type of thing. And you know, artists and writers such as yourself who put it into the world in word, I think you fulfill a very big, you know, need that we don't always realize is necessary in the world.
That's what I feel is my purpose. And I feel that people, they grow, they evolve their lives. I my goal is always for when people to read my books, for them to feel inspired to become the best version of themselves. And to not to be so hard on themselves. I feel that a lot of times we tend to bring ourselves down instead of finding that positivity in the negative, right? Or finding the gold finding the diamond in
the silver lining to be cliche, lining, right? Yeah.
Not cliche, it's the truth.
Yeah.
The truth.
Yeah. And you mentioned, obviously, you know, as a writer, it's what's inside of you, and it's authentic, and it's about being your true self and really expressing that. One of the things that I wanted to ask you about is, you know, your collections are essays and poems and, you know, letters, like as you mentioned, but I also know that you do it bilingually. So, you know, obviously being Dominican, you know, Latina, being bilingual is a very true essence to who you are. You know, I would assume, just I'm basing it on myself as well, you know, being Cuban American, born and raised in Miami, you know, it is how it is. How do you find that it is writing that out bilingually, quote unquote, I'm going to say with Spanglish, in a way that seems authentic? And the reason I'm asking this question is because many times when I've seen, you know, bilingual writing, Spanglish writing, so on, whatever, you know, a hybrid of that done, I can always tell when it's not done by someone who understands how that works as with regard to the rhythms of the words. And how do you overcome that? Because, you know, you're not just writing a sentence, you're writing a whole piece.
So not all my books are bilingual, so only my second book, and I actually did it as an homage to our culture. I fell in love with poetry at a young age, but I found my poetry style, right, of writing through reading Spanish poets.
Really?
Yes, through reading like Gustavo Adolfo Bécquer, and also my favorite poet is he was Chilean, Pablo Neruda.
Oh yeah.
And so poetry in Spanish really influenced my work since I was a child. So for me, when I think of certain, especially romantic poetry, when I think of certain words, I think of them in Spanish. And it's interesting because I was raised in Miami. Obviously, Miami is, like, not part of the U.S., I feel. but I didn't have an education in Spanish. I studied in English, so my vocabulary wasn't as extensive in Spanish than, you know, if you compare it to my English.
No estaba desarrollado, as they say.
Sí, todavía desarrollado así. Pero... I'm like, pero. but I genuinely loved it so much that I took my time to read a lot in Spanish. So, to me, poetry in Spanish is the most beautiful. The Spanish language, like correct Spanish, it is stunning. Stunning, stunning, stunning. So for me, it's always been a source of inspiration. So when I decided to write this second book, I decided to do it bilingual because I had written also a lot of poetry in Spanish already. Mm-hmm. And that to me, when I was translating it into English, I was like, oh, wow, but in Spanish, it's just so much more beautiful.
Right.
So I decided to publish this collection, and to me, like, it's the most romantic collection I have. It's just so beautiful. But yes, I there's a reason that I haven't translated my work to other languages. It's because I'm a bit I get a bit scared. Of, like, who's going to translate it. I don't know if it's going to sound like how I make my work sound.
It would lose some of the meaning, too, you know, ultimately. Because you when you pick a certain word, there's a reason, there's a purpose. You know, it's not just translated in Google. So I totally understand that fear.
I'll give you a perfect example. Like, the Bible. There's, like, 100 different translations. You know, it's like, and they all choose different words.
And it's the Bible. We're all pretty familiar with the Bible.
And that's the Bible. So imagine poetry, right?
That's a great example. That is a great example. But no, I totally relate to everything you've just said because, you know, growing up bilingual, there are just instances where there are certain words, you know, the beauty of Spanish is that certain words just have a more romantic sound. And I don't even mean, you know, romantic in the traditional way, right? I mean, you know, just they just sound more beautiful and more compelling, and also they just have more meaning to you, you know, in the most simplistic way. I always tell people, it's like, to me, the word grandmother, I mean, if I have to say it to use it as a descriptor for mine, yeah, that makes sense, but it doesn't mean anything to me, whereas abuela does. You know, it's that emotion. And then there's the whole thing where, like, I totally don't like the word mortgage, but I love the word hipoteca in Spanish. But that's just me being weird.
It's a beautiful language. No, but I'll make it even more specific. Have you ever heard of anyone call a man an English lover? You always hear Spanish lover.
This is true.
Latin lover.
That's right. That's right. Well, I think we've earned that title, though. I think there's a reason. I think
the Latin languages, English, I mean, Spanish,
yeah.
French, Italian, are just are more romantic in general.
Latin languages are great.
They're romance languages. So for me, I mean, that's, I'm not being biased because I'm Latina.
It's okay.
Just me being a fan, right?
Listen, it's okay to be a little biased, especially when you're telling the truth. That's okay. Spanish is a beautiful language. It's not bias, it's fact.
But definitely my culture has had a huge influence in everything I do.
Oh, that's
awesome. Everything I do.
That's awesome. So, you know, that brings us to you know, 18 inches, like I mentioned, distance between the heart and mind. It was released this year. And I actually just want to ask, you know, a question, because how far ahead was all of the writing completed? And was any of it kind of affected by this year? Because I know this year has just been, let's go ahead and use the word interesting for a lot of people. And, you know, you mentioned a lot about growth, and I'm just wondering if it managed to make its way into any of these writings, or if it's...
No. This book was actually finished, because how publishing works, like, mm-hmm. traditional publishing,
right.
is that you finish the book, and then the publisher will take it, read it, make sure that they're okay with publishing it, mm-hmm. then you have a lot of, like, business dealings mm-hmm. you have to work out, and then you have proofreading and editing, and then you have to get a cover. And it takes at least a year to put a book together. So, to be honest, this book was already, I had already finished writing it in early 2019.
Oh, wow. Okay.
early 2019. I think I was able to squeeze in a poem or two summer of 2019, but I didn't touch it after the summer of 2019. So, yeah, it was pre-pandemic. The writing was pre-pandemic, but it was affected by the pandemic because the original release date of 18 Inches was supposed to be May 5th. Mm. And because of the pandemic, my publisher decided to push it to September, thinking that it was going to be all over and I could go on my book tour and... Yeah.
Little did we know.
We don't know how that happened. How that happened.
Little did we know. Little did we know.
Yeah. But let me tell you something. I don't have any regrets. I think things happen how they're supposed to happen.
Absolutely.
It made me work a little harder.
Absolutely. I think we definitely need people like yourself who are, you know, creating true and authentic writing that speaks not just for yourself, but, you know, really for so many other people as well.
Yeah, definitely. It's my purpose.
That's the best way to put it, quite honestly. I mean, in a nutshell.
It's an amazing avenue that I have to connect with people. I love people. I'm one of those people. I genuinely love others. I want others to be the best version of themselves and to find their own purpose and to feel fulfilled and content. I feel that happiness goes up and down, right?
Yep.
We'll all have bad days or days that we feel down, but the overall idea of being on Earth is not only enjoying what the beauty of Earth, because it's a beautiful planet, but also it is to always push forward and to evolve our souls to a higher self. So I believe that I am able to express that with my work. And by me sharing my life and the things that I've learned, I feel that I am able to connect with people in an authentic way that they can ask themselves those same questions and it could inspire their own journey. So for me, writing is the key to that. For me,
well,
for some people, it's their music, you know, for me, it's like every page is a song, if that makes any sense.
Yes, it is. It makes total sense to me. And, you know, I will say this, you are very inspirational. And, you know, I want to thank you again for taking the time to chat with us today. You know, obviously, listeners, if you have any more inquiries about all the other things that Meep does up to, because it's a lot of stuff, you can visit her website.
That candle, that was amazing candle.
They looked really cute.
Yeah, that was our first collection we did. I'm obsessed with Greek mythology, with mythology in general. And
mythology.
We did this collection called the Mythology Collection. Three candles, 3 cents, and all the candles have quotes from my different books. Those quotes, you know, inspirational quotes that you have anywhere by your bedside, at your office, in your bathroom, in your living room, you know, wherever, it will remind you of something positive, right? And then the scents, I worked on unique scents. Mm-hmm. And they smell great. So we're always going to be, you know, releasing new scents, new quotes, and they're amazing. They're great gifts. Great gifts.
They look at. Listen, holidays around the corner, guys. I'm just saying. All right, Meep, bueno, again, thank you so much for joining us. Guys, you know, you can go to her website, meepthatmichelle.com. Also, I'll be tagging her.
Con H.
That's right. It's Mirta, like, and I'll say this because it's our audience, like Mirta de Perales, the shampoo. It's, you know, with the H.
Yes. Oh, my God. I used to love those commercials when I was little. he goes with that chica mierda.
Well, I will say a little trivia.
They follow me on Instagram. It's so funny.
They follow us too. Actually, a little trivia for you. My co-host, who couldn't make it today to the interview, he actually, growing up as a little kid, was a chico mita. So he actually... Yes, ma'am.
Wow. It's such a Miami-Cuban thing, by the way.
Really?
I'm Dominican, but I grew up with Cubans, so I feel that I'm... I have a little Cuban in me. My great-grandfather was Cuban, but it's like home to me, you know. So whenever people talk about Cuban anything, I connect.
Oh, listen, in Caribe we're all similar, you know.
Yes, we're all primos.
Of course, of course. Bueno, and on that note, prima, thank you so much for joining us.
And we're back.
I'm telling you, I always think of Wake Up San Francisco whenever you do that.
And we're back?
Yeah, I don't know why. Like, well, I genuinely don't know why.
Well, you know. Wake up.
Hi.
So that was fun.
That was. I mean, it was great because she actually did the whole interview, like, in her car as she was driving.
As one does.
You know, it's like, man, we have a lot of guests who, you know, who interview us, like, on the go in their car.
Well, because, you know, now...
It's great.
Now in the day of...
the virtual,
COVID,
yeah.
You know, where do you do an interview?
Yeah, the Zoom call is our livelihood.
It's funny because, like, prior to COVID, we obviously, you know, sometimes we had interviews with people on Skype or whatever.
If they were in another state.
Right, but generally we like to have all our interviews in person. And now it's like, even when we interview somebody who's down the street, it's like, oh.
Can we do it virtually?
You know, so, and, you know, we try to make it be the same. I personally... prefer the real person but
there's something to having feeding off that energy in person.
Yeah. Bueno, let's get to our last sodas.
Okay. You look like you have one ready to go and you're very proud of it.
So my last soda is to, I mean, there's no secret that I fangirl over him, is to The Weeknd.
That's right. We didn't talk about The Weeknd.
We're going to talk about The Weeknd now. When I mean The Weeknd, I mean Abel. You know,
yes, yes.
The
not
singer,
the long weekend that's the happening
weekend.
Now. Yeah.
We talked about The Weeknd about the beginning.
Yes.
The real Weeknd. So
that's the most confusing sentence.
We talked about The Weeknd at the beginning, the real Weeknd, not the other Weeknd, the one who's a singer. So last week was the Super Bowl.
That's right.
And I'm not a huge football fan. But I generally do like to watch the game.
Right, especially if it's a good game.
I had no interest in watching this game whatsoever.
It was not a good game.
No interest. I mean, yes, Tom Brady is the greatest of all time, blah, 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 blah. Look, I'm not going to hate on Tom Brady because my favorite team is the Yankees. And a lot of the argument that people have about Tom Brady is the same argument they have about the Yankees. Oh, you know, they always win. They're the empire, blah, blah, blah. Oh, yeah, but you know what? Good for him. He won 7 rings, you know, ahorita. He has more rings than fingers. Okay, great.
Ahorita, he's the Thanos of Super Bowls.
And I was just like, I don't know. Whatever. Because I generally do like to watch the game.
Yeah.
But this particular time, no. But I was looking forward to the halftime show.
Yes.
A lot of people had criticisms on the halftime show that they thought that it was a little boring.
It was, I wouldn't say boring, I would say subdued.
And here's the thing, in defense of Abel. Okay, first of all, he was challenged in the sense that he couldn't have the stage in the middle. Right?
Okay, right.
So he had the stage on the side, which was cool in a way.
It was interesting.
It was interesting and it was different. But obviously, when you have a stage in the middle in a stadium filled with 70,000+ people, you know, you could be there with a harmonica that everybody's going to be excited, right?
Do not give the Super Bowl any ideas.
Right? So, you know, he had a lot working against him.
Right.
Also, he was coming off the heels of Jennifer Lopez and Shakira, who, as we say, were the closing ceremonies to the world as we knew it.
Yes, that was the closing ceremony of 2020.
Which is probably one of the most famous Super Bowls of all time.
Yeah.
Super Bowl halftime performances.
And there was a lot going on.
There was a lot going on. There was a lot of energy, you know, because that's who they are.
Right.
Whereas he is a different genre of music, right? So I think all things considered, I think his show was great. Do I rank it as one of the best Super Bowl shows of all time? No. But I think it was fine.
It was enjoyable.
I mean, he did the best that he could. It was different.
Right.
I'm always going to side with him because I love him, but yeah, I thought
you
it was
also,
good.
But you also are very fair. Like, even, you know, artists that you love, mm-hmm. you call them out when they give a bad performance or when yeah. they do something that's lackluster.
Yeah.
So I tend to side with you when you're enthusiastic about an artist because I know you'll also take the...
I thought his set list was great.
That was,
you know,
really...
Yeah. He did some of his greatest hits, and you know what? I think the Super Bowl is not the time for you to start pulling out B-sides.
No.
And, you know,
No. This is the new song I'm working on.
Right. Like, no, yeah, this is the new song. No, I don't want to hear your new song. No.
Give us the hits, babe. Let's
yeah.
go.
Yeah. You yeah. need to put your biggest hits on yeah. that period.
You got
right?
5 minutes. Right. Dale.
So, I thought it was good. You know, he got some shit. Some people liked it. Some people didn't. He got some shit. I also give him credit because the thing with The Weeknd, as you probably know, The Weeknd, a lot of his subject matter is really dark.
Dark, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It may sound bubbly,
but it's not. And, you know, his from his image to his videos, they're very not prime time. Right.
Especially so not Super Bowl.
That's why when he was given the Super Bowl, I was like, as much as I like him, I would have not thought that he was Super Bowl. Not that he's not Super Bowl material, because clearly he can be.
That it's something they would have courted.
Right. Because especially with this album, like, he has a very dark image with this out, with the whole like storyline of this current album. But, you know, he kept it. He kept it very tasteful.
Right.
He kept it very tasteful. He even, I saw the press conference, he even said that, you know, he knows that families watch this.
Right.
And it was fine. I also kind of appreciated that he didn't make it political.
It was refreshing.
Because I'm always down for a political moment,
you know,
but
he's Canadian. You know how those Canadians, they're very polite.
You just need a break. So I was kind of happy with that too. So, you know, my last soda, although it was the Pepsi halftime, my last soda goes to Abel, to The Weeknd.
To The Weeknd. Well, that's a good one. Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with you. I mean, it was entertaining. I don't think it was necessarily memorable
I wouldn't put him in the top 10, you know, Super Bowl performances time. But it was good enough.
Yeah. It did the job.
It was not Maroon 5.
It
was. You know what my biggest problem with Maroon 5 was?
What?
My problem with Maroon 5, and I don't dislike Maroon 5.
I know you don't.
And I don't dislike Adam Levine at all. I think Maroon 5 has... Maroon 5 is popular enough to be a halftime act.
Right.
My problem was the collaborations. They were so not... They were so like, we're in Atlanta, we need to have a rapper.
Right.
So bring whatever rapper. You know,
right.
It was so like,
it didn't seem thought
contrived.
Out.
Like, it wasn't, it was just such a turnoff because it's like, again, they were probably like, oh yeah, we're in Atlanta.
Right.
Then if that's the case, then you should have given it
to an Atlanta artist.
I think they should have given it to Jermaine Dupri and bring on his roster of people. But that's a story for another day. I mean, hello. Jermaine Dupri has a song called Welcome to Atlanta, which the remix is like freaking awesome. But whatever. That's another story.
Well, my last soda.
In a Ferrari Jaguar switching four lanes, top down, screaming out, money ain't a thing. Go ahead.
My last soda could not be as far removed from what you just did if it tried. So my last soda actually goes to the family of the late Alex Trebek.
Oh.
And the that one
hit hard.
And the producers of Jeopardy.
Yeah.
So they have taken 14 of his...
Two Canadians, The Weeknd and his family.
They've taken 14 of his suits, 58 dress shirts, 300 neckties, and various other items of clothing that actually once belonged to Alex Trebek, and they donated it to the DOE Fund, D-O-E Fund, which is an organization that provides paid work, housing, vocational training, continuing education, and comprehensive social services to underserved Americans with histories of addiction, homelessness, and incarceration, so that they could have, like, you know, a nice... clothing to wear to interviews and things like that. So I thought that was very nice, you know,
that
because
was very nice.
Think about how, I mean, again, every time this man, how many episodes of Jeopardy did he do? He was always in a suit. You know what I mean? It was always, you know, finely tailored and all that. And to just have it sitting in a warehouse somewhere in storage. I mean, I'm sure some of them went to the Smithsonian and, you know, whatever the Canadian equivalent of the Smithsonian is. But they actually put it to use, you know? And I thought that was just a very nice gesture to show, like, even after he's gone, you know, this is a guy who's still doing classy things.
Yeah. That one hurt. I have to say that that one hurt more than I thought it was. Not that I didn't think it was, because I love Jeopardy and we all grew up on Alex Trebek, but that one really hurt. Like, I can't believe
it. I felt it.
Because he was such a staple.
Yeah. And he was so positive.
Yeah, he was.
Like, never, right up until the end.
He never,
like,
took himself too seriously. He worked until the end. Like, I think those are real moments that define somebody's character.
Yeah. You know? And like we said, he was a game show host, which I don't think exists anymore.
Well, tell that to Pat Sajak.
Outside of Pat and Vanna. But, like, you don't have a quote-unquote game show host anymore. Now you have actors who host game shows.
Right, right. So I think that we should take this episode to make our petition, if you want to call it, that next year's halftime guest show should be Dolly Parton.
It should be.
Listen, Dolly Parton will unify this country. Everybody loves Dolly Parton.
You don't have to convince me.
The liberals, the Hispanics, the gays, the blacks, the Jewish, the everybody.
Asians, everybody.
Everybody loves Dolly Parton. Everyone.
I feel like the most somebody could say is that they just don't care for her. But I don't feel like anybody dislikes her.
No, no.
You know what I mean? Like, to actively dislike Dolly Parton, I feel, takes more effort.
Yeah. Everybody loves Dolly Parton. As they should.
As they should. She's a national treasure.
She's a national treasure. And I really think that she will unify this country.
It would probably be the highest rated Super Bowl halftime ever.
I don't know.
She's country. She's pop. She could bring in Miley for a younger demo.
Yes. You're right. We need to make this happen.
She could bring in Deborah Cox to sing I Will Always Love You together.
Oh.
Who did you think I was talking about?
I had a brain fart.
You forgot?
I had a brain fart for a minute. I'm like, why didn't she just
Which actually, on the day we're recording, this is the anniversary of Whitney's death. It's been 9 years.
Whoa, wow. I need water.
There's a reason Whitney wouldn't show up.
In my mind, I was like, wait, why would she...
Like, why not just bring out Whitney?
Wow. I've had a lot of things to do today. I had 3 Zoom calls.
Oh, like, that's... Listen, the fact that you managed to not become a cat.
That's true. But yeah, Dolly Parton, you heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen.
Dolly Parton 2022. Let's make it happen, kids.
Everybody loves her. Everybody loves her.
There's no downside.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? That should be a criteria as to whether you like someone or not. Oh, you hate Dolly Parton or you don't like her? No.
You're probably not a good person.
That says something about you.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but I know there's something off.
Yeah. I mean, when we went to her concert, so Isha and I went to her concert maybe 2 or 3 years ago.
No.
I can't say that I know Dolly Parton's extensive discography.
Right.
I mean, I know obviously Jolene and
the hits. Yeah.
I didn't know 80% of all the songs, but they were so enjoyable. They were so enjoyable, and everybody was having such a good time. And
there was so much emotion in the songs.
I remember she kept singing this song about Uncle Jack, something Jack. And I kept thinking of the cereal.
What's...
Apple Jacks, something Jack, like, whatever. She kept singing about a song that said Jack. And I remember when she sang it, the lights were green and red.
Oh, so it was like Apple Jacks.
Yes, I was thinking of the cereal. Never mind. On that note, ladies and gentlemen, we hope everybody had a great time. Have a great weekend, Pedro Friday.
Yes.
We hope you listened, laughed, and learned. And as always, remember to get your pastelito, your croqueta, and your cafecito. And thank you for joining us, everybody. Happy Friday. Happy Pedro Friday.
Yes. Happy Valentine's Day. Enjoy the long weekend, caballero.
Bye.
Bye. Pero Let Me Tell You is co-hosted by Darian Borges and Ismael Llano, produced by Ismael Llano, and our theme, Pero Let Me Tell You Freestyle, is composed by Michael Angelo Lomlaplex, the official gay guy. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes.
Want Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.